This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're continuing hour number three, rolling along this morning. Glad you can be with us on a Wednesday. We will have Gabe Lax join us, USA Today. Talk Major League Baseball because the Texas Rangers made quick work of the Baltimore Orioles. They're on their way to the ALCS. The Astros win yesterday. They now lead Minnesota two games to one. The Phillies and the Braves play tonight. That series knotted up at one. And the Diamondbacks leading the Dodgers 2-0. That game also tonight. So full slate of Major League Baseball for today. And then we roll into the weekend. Thursday night, NFL. It's the Denver Broncos in Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. As we said earlier, a 15-game losing skid for the Broncos going up against Kansas City. And then, of course, a full slate, including Friday night, Colorado taking on Stanford. And I know people, it might have calmed down a little bit of the Deion buzz, but I will say this. It doesn't change people's narrative when it comes to what Colorado has done. Just that it's going to die down a little bit. It's going to happen, and it was going to happen. I never thought, unless Colorado pulled off an upset against Oregon and USC and was ranked in the top 10, they were not going to be a team that people were going to be dissecting every single week. They were going to be back in the middle of the pack of the Pac-12. The Pac-12 has had so many great stories this year, and it is too bad that it is being dissected. And it is too bad that it's leaving. It's part of the business. I get part of the business. I get that they couldn't save it, and I understand why they couldn't save it. They had the wrong commissioner who wasn't strong enough to get them the television deal as much as they wanted, as quickly as they wanted to secure themselves. And USC and UCLA leaving meant that the clock was ticking on that conference. They weren't going to replace two teams in LA. Even if they tried to get a San Diego State, even if they tried to get somebody else, that conference wasn't going to be able to hang around much longer. But once the dominoes started to fall, then inevitably what you're having now is the Big 12 and the Big 10 gobbling up these schools. But this college football season has been not just Colorado and USC and Oregon. Washington State, Oregon State. I mean, these are teams. I mean, look, Arizona gave USC fits, right? Arizona State gave Colorado fits. This has been, and of course, there's Utah that's also ranked. This is a fun conference, and it's going out with a bang, an absolute bang. This could be one of the best years Pac-12 has had in football in a long time, and it's the last one you will see. And that's it. They will play each other in terms of if I went to that conference with you or not. So if you know, Washington will still play USC in the Big Ten, but the Big 12 has gobbled up Colorado, I think Utah. Who else did they gobble up? Arizona State, Arizona.
Yep.
Yeah, those are the teams that are going that way.
Those four.
Yep. And then there was Washington, Washington, Oregon.
UCLA, USC.
UCLA, USC, they're going to the Big Ten.
And then you have Stanford and Cal.
They're going to the ACC. Right.
Which makes all the sense in the world.
You need a Cliff Notes book to figure out what all this is. You know what's going to happen? This is what's going to happen to me. I don't know about anybody else, but this is going to happen to me. I'm going to forget what conferences people are in.
Yep.
Like, I'm going to forget. And so I did this with Maryland. Maryland, to me, was one of the long-standing ACC teams for a long time, especially in basketball, where I just remember them playing Duke, and I remember them playing North Carolina, mm-hmm. and I remember Gary Williams, and I remember some of the good players that Maryland had over the years. I remember Len Bias in the 80s because the Celtics drafted him. And then Maryland went to the Big Ten, and I think many times, talking about Maryland, I totally forgot they had switched conferences and started talking about Maryland as one of the ACC teams, and I'm like, whoa, hold on, they're not playing those teams anymore.
I'm better about it. But I still feel that way about Nebraska.
Sure. Nebraska, yeah, exactly. That was like that very early on in their move to the Big Ten, where you felt like, wait a minute, aren't they supposed to be part of this Big 12?
What do you mean these guys are on top of the Big 12? Isn't that supposed to be Nebraska?
Yeah, same thing. Syracuse out of the Big East, right? Now, next thing you know, they're like, wait, they're not supposed to be playing Duke. Why aren't they playing Georgetown?
Like, at least, you know, thankfully, you know, most of the rivalry teams went, except for the Washingtons and the Oregons. That one's going to be weird.
That is going to be weird. Do they book an Apple Cup? Do they book a civil war.
Yeah.
Just like Florida and Florida State or South Carolina and Clemson, where they just reserve that final game for that non-conference opponent.
But when they made the move to the SEC, Texas A&M and Texas ceased to exist.
That's right. They didn't. They didn't stopped. Renew that. And a lot of it has to do with your conference. Like, your conference may come down and go, wait, we're in here. Those of us here in the Big Ten, we play 9 conference games, and we want, you know, at the end of the season, we want you playing this and this. And you go, oh, right. Well, there's no room for an Apple Cup at the end of the year. Right. And there goes the tradition. There goes that. So, but this has been a really fun college football season for the Pac-12. I think they've got the best quarterbacks.
I love what you said. You know, it's like, hey, they're going out with a bang. And they are.
Yeah, they really are.
Maybe
they've
most...
got the best quarterbacks. They've got some of the best teams.
Uh-huh.
It's, you know. And, I mean, if your biggest complaint about an unbeaten USC is that it takes them a while to put the team away, and that's. And
I'm curious
still get them
now.
In the top 10.
I'm curious now, if USC and UCLA hadn't started at all, right? Because
right.
they were the first ones. They were the first domino to fall, and everyone left with them because they couldn't get a TV deal. Had they everyone just stayed where they were and played the long game, and the Pac-12 is having the conference that they're having right now, could they have gotten a good TV deal?
Yeah, that's a great question. If they had struck earlier, I think they could. I think one of their problems is there's only so much money.
Right.
And it was being gobbled up by the other conferences who got their deals done earlier. And the commissioner, George Kalikoff, was kind of caught off guard by all that and couldn't negotiate a good deal.
And I think he figured,
deal.
I mean, he backed the wrong horse. He figured everyone was going to stay.
Right.
Like, where are they going to? It doesn't make any sense for UCLA, USC to play on the East Coast. It's just, they'll stay put and we'll figure it out. We'll all work together.
Like, you know who's leading the in college football is the top passer in the college football? Shedeur Sanders. And that's not Michael Penix. It's not Caleb Williams. It's not DJ Uiagalelei. It's Colorado's guy. Colorado, of all the teams, has Shedeur Sanders as the top passer, top offensive passer in the NFL. Not defensive passer. There's no such thing. But nevertheless, that's phenomenal for the conference this year, but it's not for next year when everybody goes bye-bye. When it's no longer existing. Your top three of your top offensive teams in college football are Pac-12 teams. Right? Washington averages nearly 570 yards per game. Oregon's right behind them. USC is fourth. LSU is the only SEC team in the top 5. Like, how great is this conference playing right now? And yet, bye.
Yep. Next year you can't say that.
No.
Can't go. How great is this conference play? No.
If you check the odds on the Heisman Trophy, on who's going to win the Heisman Trophy, like, Michael Penix is, I think, the Caleb Williams, Michael Penix, Bo Nix are like the top 3 in the odds to win the Heisman. So they have been 6 weeks into the season. A lot can change. I get it. But they have been in the first month and a half of the college football season the best conference by a mile. Yep, Michael Penix, Caleb Williams, and Bo Nix are your three top betting favorites for the Heisman. Dylan Gabriel of Oklahoma, J.J. McCarthy of Michigan, Jordan Travis of Florida State are round out your top 6. There you go. Pac-12 football. Bye. You should gather all the memorabilia you can.
Yeah.
Right?
All the ticket stubs, anything
all
that says Pac-12 on it.
Go to the Pac-12 championship in Las Vegas and just bask in its finalness.
And then we still get a Pac-12 basketball season. So
yeah, we still get that.
It'll be the last one of that.
That's
one as
right.
well.
We still get that. That's true. The Pac-12 won't completely disappear because you're right. The other sports will be wrapping it up and finishing it up. So... Gabe Lax is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk some baseball with him. So the Texas Rangers are in the ALCS.
I'm really disappointed in the Orioles.
I am too.
Get a chance. I mean, unfortunately, with my schedule, I didn't get a chance to see one game.
The entire
wait for
AL
them to get prime
East
time.
Didn't even get to know you completely.
Yeah, 0-7. That's not a good look.
No, it isn't. In a quick 0-7, in a blink of an eye, both Toronto and Tampa Bay were out of this thing. Before you even had a chance to settle into baseball postseason, those teams were eliminated. And, again, the feel-good story of the Orioles it's still a feel good story. They won 101 games. They finished in last place like 2 years ago, right? But now it's gone. Bye bye. See you later. It's probably likely going to be Texas and Houston. I mean, I'm not giving up on the Twins, but it could be Texas and Houston, which would be great. And then we'll just see how the NL plays itself out tonight. Maybe the Dodgers hang on, get a victory. But Arizona knows how to play ball, man.
Yeah, I would feel better if we had like some sort of pitcher you've heard of coming onto the mound.
Well, you're not familiar with the Lance Lynn of the Chicago White Sox?
Yeah, is he related wasn't Lance Lynn a catcher?
Yeah. Lance Lynn.
I don't know. I know that the Dodgers, you know, routinely the Dodgers really didn't get anybody in this year. They're saving all their pennies for their pennies for Shohei. I don't know if they are any now. Who knows what's even going to come out of that. But they need to go find a pitcher. I mean, they brought in good pitchers year after year after year, and then they all kind of they got rid of too soon. Should have waited for all the facts to come out, as we know now. And, I mean, you brought in Justin Verlander. Scherzer.
Yeah, Scherzer, yeah.
He bolted, you know, and then Clayton. I mean, it's like you guys are holding on to Clayton, and I hate saying this about a player, but I think Clayton is done.
I think he's done, too. There's too many narratives about him in the postseason that make you just go, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, every time he pitches, you go, well, let's see. I'm expecting the worst, but I'm hoping for the best, and he delivers the worst.
If you're wanting him to play past September, you gotta maybe you don't play him at all during the regular season. I don't know what the answer is.
Exactly. Hey, when we come back, I want to talk a little golf, because there was a big ruling on the LIV Tour about world points. It does matter, and I'll tell you the story behind it next when we continue with Wake Up Golf.
You're listening to Wake Up Golf. SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Gabe Lax will join us in 15 minutes, talk baseball and the postseason, as we will have some three games today on the schedule. So I want to get to golf, because yesterday it was ruled that the world rankings are not going to recognize the LIV Tour. They pitched their case again, and they got shot down again. You know, the LIV Tour is trying to get world championship points. This helps players get on Ryder Cup teams, getting automatic bids to be on Ryder Cup teams, for example. And it also helps the golfers in other world championships in getting into majors and things like that. Because remember, the Masters, the U.S. Open, the PGA, and the British Open are not part of the tours. They are independent entities. The Masters run itself, the USGA runs the U.S. Open, the RNA runs the British Open, and the PGA of America runs the PGA Championship, not the PGA Tour. Those tours are separate from the majors. So how you qualify for the majors is a number of criteria, and one of them is world rankings. So if you're in the top 50, for example, you can earn an automatic bid if you haven't already earned an automatic bid based on these tournaments. And what we've saw was the RNA and the USGA and the Masters, they have not gone the way of banning or prohibiting LIV golfers from playing in their events. They may not like LIV. They may not like the players that left LIV, but they go, you know what? That's not our fight. We have a championship. If these golfers make the championship, they can play. Brooks Koepka won the PGA Championship. Now, we say this knowing that there was the big news earlier this year that the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour and LIV Tour were all going to merge together. The problem is nobody really knows what that's going to look like. They announced it, but they haven't really set exactly what it is. And Phil Mickelson has said the LIV Tour is going to stay the LIV Tour. We're still going to do our thing. So I don't know what that means. Like, we'll wait and see. But LIV Golf went to pitch itself to the board of the official world golf rankings and said, you know what, we would like to get our guys world championship points or playing in our tournaments. And they said no. And here's why they said no. And it kind of makes sense. So if you're a young player and you get your PGA Tour card, when you play in PGA Tour events, that tournament is open to the best golfers in the world. If they show up or if they don't show up, guys who have their PGA Tour card, it's you are playing in a tournament that could include Rory McIlroy, for example. He plays in PGA Tour events. Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Scottie Scheffler. They may skip that tournament, but they are absolutely welcome if they want to play. So let's say you're a 22-year-old kid. You're fresh out of Florida State. You're on the PGA Tour. And you go play the Children's Hospital of Texas Open. And you win. You may not have beaten Scottie Scheffler. He may have skipped that event for whatever reason. But you beat Jordan Thomas. Justin Thomas. You beat Jordan Spieth. You're going to earn some points. Because this event is open to the best golfers in the world who have their PGA Tour card. It's a 72-hole golf tournament. All of those things. LIV is an invitation only, meaning you can only play on the LIV Tour if you've been invited and accepted to play in the LIV Tour by their discretion. You earn your PGA Tour card. The PGA Tour just doesn't go out and go, here you go, we like you. We think you're really cool. We think you can bring us attention. Here. No, you have to go to Q School. You have to earn it there. If you're a European, you have to earn it on the DP World Tour. Like, there's a number of criteria that allows you to win the PGA. It's not an organization that goes, you're nice. Would you like to make $200 million and play for us? So that's where the world golf rankings have said, no, you're a 54-hole limited field golf tournament, and the limited field is are only people that you've liked enough to join it. That's not good enough. That's not good enough. So your golfer wins a tournament against the same people every single week in a 54-hole event. Rory McIlroy doesn't play there. Scottie Scheffler doesn't play there. Right? Nobody play. You know, none of the top golfers in our rankings play there. So you don't have a way of really measuring it out. You're just a club of really good golfers. And we can't recognize that. So we're not going to give you points. And again, like I said, this is, you know, world ranking points allow golfers who are on the cusp of missing majors, getting into majors, and it allows good golfers to play their way on Ryder Cup teams based on the discretion of the captains. Now on the European side, they're not allowing LIV golfers, but in the American side, if you earned enough, you could be invited. Brooks Koepka, for example, had earned enough by winning the PGA to be part of the Ryder Cup team. They could have brought in Dustin Johnson. They could have brought in a number of other LIV golfers like Bryson DeChambeau, Patrick Reed. They did not. Hence why they got slaughtered over in Italy. So nevertheless, it was just something that I noticed yesterday. But why this is a big deal is because if these golfers and this merger doesn't shape itself out, these golfers are going to lose critical points that help them be a part of the thing they really loved about being in golf in the first place. Right? A lot of these guys want to continue to play in major championships. They're making a lot of money, and the money is generational wealth, but a lot of them didn't earn automatic exemptions into the Masters like Phil Mickelson, like Bubba Watson, like Patrick Reed, like Dustin Johnson. Some of them didn't win USGA events like the Open, like Bryson DeChambeau. Some of them didn't win the British Open, like Henrik Stenson. Some of these guys on LIV need these world championship points to get into majors and the tournaments that they got in the business, you know, why they got in the first place. Give me all the money in the world, but if I can't play in the British Open, why did I even bother? I can only buy so many things. After a while, the money just becomes numb, right? I don't get the same high on having a lot of money in my bank account because I've got everything I want. You know what I don't have? What Brooks Koepka has. He's on my LIV tour. I see him all the time, and he talks about his trophy case that has his U.S. Open trophies and his PGA trophies. Or I hear about Tiger Woods' trophy case. Or I hear about Phil Mickelson's trophy case. Or I hear about Rory McIlroy's trophy case, where it's just the majors. I don't have that, and I'm not going to get that because I can't get enough world points. Even if I win 10 of these LIV events, I'm not going to get invited to the British Open because I didn't previously qualify before I jettisoned to this. Which was the warning everyone gave these guys in the beginning of it all. You want to chase the money? Fine. You want to create generational wealth for your great-grandkids? Fine. But be okay with not qualifying for the U.S. Open. Be okay with not getting invited to the Masters. Be okay with sitting on your couch and watching the British Open. Because if you don't if you have not earned automatic qualifications to these events, like if you won a British Open, you get to play there until you're 60. If you've won a Masters, you get to play there until you die. If you've won a U.S. Open, you're exempt, I think, for 10 years. If you've won these events, you get invited back. But if you haven't, you can have a big bank account, but you're not going to get those invitations. And you're going to watch when everybody around the world is really paying attention to your sport, you're left out on its biggest stage. And these guys know it, right? These guys know it. I think that some of these guys were sold something that did not come to fruition. I don't know how many of them regret it, because, man, some of these guys are still walking the walk and talking the talk about how great LIV is. But I'm not talking about the Mickelsons. They have a field of 48 golfers, and not every one of them is Mickelson or Bryson DeChambeau or Dustin Johnson. I wonder how some of these guys are like, yeah, you know what? I get paid a lot of money. But you know what? Mito Pereira is one of them, who finished second to Justin Thomas of the PGA. Thomas Peters. Like, some of these guys that are on this tour are like, wow, I thought eventually we would be taken seriously as a golf tour. I was told we were going to be getting world championship points. I was told that while it's going to be rough in the beginning, it would turn into a very respectable thing, and it's not turning into that. Now, we'll see what this merger is. Once it all comes together, maybe this won't matter. But if it doesn't come together, it will matter. And they don't have a place to go to if they decide to leave LIV to pursue their golf goals, because they ain't going to be welcome back. All right, Gabe Lax is going to join us from USA Today. We're going to talk to him about Major League Baseball. How much are the Dodgers in trouble down 0-2 in a must-win game tonight in Phoenix? And where does he see the Atlanta Braves and the Philadelphia Phillies? Braves come back with two big home runs late, but they did trail 4-0, and they were shut out 3-0 in the first game. And can Texas go all the way, doing it the way people expect you to do it now? Fire people and then hire players with big money. We'll talk to Gabe Lax all about that next if the postseason rolls along in baseball, and we continue on Wake Up Call.
Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, we're going back to the Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance for a job you'll love. Visit progressive.com/careers. Gabe Lax set to join us as soon as he gets out of the elevator. I like that. Atlanta Braves and the Philadelphia Phillies game 3 tonight in Philadelphia just announced. Bryce Elder is going to get the start for Atlanta. They've been waiting on that decision. They really didn't have much of a choice. It was Smith Sawyer, their rookie, or Bryce Elder. But Elder has really struggled in the second half of the season, got like an ERA over 5 since August 1st. So that's going to be the starting pitchers tonight. Gabe Lax joins us from USA Today to talk the Major League Baseball playoffs. How are you, my friend?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. Hey, right off the bat, Ron and I were talking yesterday about Bryce Harper on the Bates Plaza. We both believe he just made a calculated decision on his baseball intelligence and said, you know what? That's a well-hit ball. I know the trajectory of it. I'm going to make a play when it drops. Do you buy that? Was that a bad base running move, or was that just a calculated decision on his part and it didn't pay off?
I think it was a relatively calculated in that, you know, and who knows how much he can process within a matter of just a few seconds. But,
right.
You know, he knows if it's caught, there's two outs and you're deeper into the order. Castellanos is cleared. The best shot, you know, if I get the first with one out, it's still Raisel Iglesias on the mound. If I score, we're tied, you know. So, I think so. And I think surprised a bit by Michael Harris. Also, the ball might have checked up just a little bit as it got to the wall. Like, it looked like it was gone.
Yeah, really.
And, yeah, and clearly, Money Mike made a great play. So, I don't, perfect world. He just freezes on the bag at second. I also think that massive brace on his arm, he can't quite turn and change directions and get up to speed quite as quickly. Once he gets ahead of steam, he's fine. But, it's all those factors. I don't cap on him too much.
What has worked and what has not worked in that series for both teams? I mean, look, they're divisional foes. We get it. The Phillies had beaten the Braves last year. We look like we're buckling in for a very good series. But where is Atlanta falling a little short?
Yeah, I mean, the game one just really well designed by Rob Thompson and those guys to go with Ranger Suarez for just a few minutes, i.e. 12, 13 outs, nine to 10 outs even. Those guys had to have everybody clicking out of the bullpen to win that game. So that was huge, to win the Strider game. I don't think anybody's not clicking or overly clicking. I mean, it's just been two games, so, we can't analyze it too much. I just think this is a series where absolutely momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. And so, it looks really likely that it's going to be 1-1 here in Philly and back to Atlanta for game five, which wouldn't be shocking, of course. We've seen that Strider can be beat, but look at all the things that had to go well for him to do that. So, if the Phillies can repeat that feat tomorrow, hats off to them, and they probably are moving on. And also, I definitely share the concerns of this being the Braves' kind of get-through game. Funny thing is, Philly fans were kind of freaking out about Aaron Nola a week ago. He had a 5.86 ERA from, I think, late July to early September. And so suddenly it's like, you don't necessarily just say all is well. He beat the Marlins, which is great. He curveball looked great. He looked really good. But, you don't absolutely take it as a given that he wins this game. Could be a little bit of a slugfest, two really amazing offenses. So, you forecast it that they split here, but who knows? It doesn't take much to break serve, really.
If I go to the other series in the National League and I just talk about the Dodgers and I talk about their lack of starting pitching and the bats going cold, am I taking away from what the Diamondbacks are doing? If I'm making it Dodger-centric, am I missing on some of the great decisions that they're making in this series?
It's a good question. And I think we still are finding out just how good are the Diamondbacks. So it's like it's still a lot of unknowns there. I think you have to – I don't know. I think you have to place a little bit of blame on Dodgers hitting.
Sure.
Just because, they've owned Merrill Kelly over the years. Gallen's a really good pitch. He's not Spencer Strider in that he's going to strike out a dozen of you. And Mookie has just been in a playoff funk for a while. So, really small sample, but you do have to kind of scratch your head. I think the end of game one was really disappointing too, because you're obviously the Kershaw debacle, but you were not able to pressure them at all to make them dip into their bullpen. Not that it's that big of a deal because of the two off days, but at the same time, okay, you got to show some signs of life, and especially when Merrill Kelly is just throwing the ball over the plate theoretically, just because he's got a 7-9 run lead, whatever. So, yeah, pretty disappointing Dodger offense so far, and obviously they're going to need to show up in the desert.
The Rangers have advanced after they swept the Orioles. Can you take us back to the offseason? How did this all start? What was the mindset of the organization when they parted ways with John Daniels, parted ways, got a new manager, the mindset of spending money? Take us back to all of that, how this is built.
Yeah, and, it's important for fans to remember that these things don't get built in a day. They don't get built in a year, in one off season. So it's been two off seasons now since they decided to go big on Corey Seager and Marcus Semien. And let's not forget John Gray. All of that added up to $500 million.
Yeah.
And then, you think you really set a tone this year by saying, we're just getting started. We're going to give Jacob DeGrom $185 million. So it's, you know, I think that really shifted the mindset. Because let's not forget, they lost, I think, 90-something games with Seager and Simeon last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you know, gosh, Andrew Haney, like the guy always kind of proves the doubters wrong in a sense, just because, okay, what does that mean really? But he pitched capably this year, added another arm to the mix, and obviously Eovaldi too. You know, a guy everybody could use. You know, he's the kind of Eovaldi's the kind of guy where 20 teams are going to be like, hey, let's get Nathan Eovaldi this offseason because he's not going to cost you $200 million, right? The Rangers went and got him. They won the bidding. Probably didn't hurt that he's from Texas, albeit the Houston side of it. But, it really has worked out wonderfully for them. And really, yeah, I don't know if you call him the team to beat just because, gosh, that bullpen has always seemed to be teetering just a little bit. But, you know, really, really good patience. Obviously, you know, the John Daniels regime did do some good things with regard to, you know, obviously getting Evan Carter in the organization, Josh Young, guys like that. So it's, you know, it's an interesting kind of lesson in patience, but also, you know, it doesn't necessarily take a magic wand. You need to kind of keep at it for a while.
I wonder if for the Yankees and the Red Sox, because we didn't get to see the Orioles that much, but I wonder if the Yankees and the Red Sox are like, oh my gosh, now there's another team I got to consider in this division. Like that used to be the team that was going to sit at the bottom for a while. Now I'm got it. It's the Rays, Toronto, Baltimore I got to fight through in this division. I feel bad. I wish the Orioles had a little bit more staying power. I thought they were a great story.
Yeah, and it's really just comes down to, you know, game one. That's what they're really kind of dissecting in Baltimore, because that's a game the kind of game the Orioles, you know, have won throughout the year, a 3-2 game. Maybe they come back late. You know, their bullpen holds steady. I think Brandon Hyde did a pretty good job. The second guessing that comes out of that and out of game two, pretty much on that really like micro level, like you could, okay, maybe debate a little bit, but largely push the right buttons, just maybe with the exception of Jacob Webb kind of coming in big situations both days and not getting the job done. And probably shouldn't have put him in that spot 2 days in a row. But, it may be tough for the Red Sox and Yankees. It's tough when you got a John Carlos Stanton on the payroll for another 3 or so years. Again, you know, there are no magic wands in the offseason. And the funny thing about it is, too, in the, you know, the real glory years of the Yankees and Red Sox, not only is it like these guys we can beat up, but the order of finish, circa like 2000 to 2004 in the AL East, it was Yankees, Red Sox, Blue Jays, Orioles, Rays, and the bottom three were pretty bad.
Right.
And one more note on this, like you know, back in those days, it was the tough AL East. You know, oh my gosh, no, that was not the tough AL East. Sure, you got the Yankees and Red Sox, but you know, they're only going to play each other 18, 19 times. You know, the other three guys are going to absolutely feast on. Okay, you want to see a tough AL East? Now is a tough
yes,
AL East. And,
exactly.
And those guys are really finding out about it now.
Gabe Laxton joining us of Talk Baseball. Appreciate your time as always. Even get to the Astros and Twins, but I always love talking baseball with you, my friend. Thank you so much.
The Astros will always be around.
You know it. You know it. Catch up with you later, my man. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
Gabe Lax, USA Today on the baseball playoffs. I mean, seriously, how good is that division, man? How good is that division? Like, that you can get a team that pops up. And you know what? And Texas, too. Texas and Seattle finally emerging. But Yankees and Red Sox were the basement teams of a division with the Rays, Blue Jays, and Orioles. And the Orioles won 101 games. Too bad they couldn't last that long.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
You know, I was just thinking, with the Texas Rangers winning, that means Creed wins. If Creed wins, we all win, doesn't
man,
that?
Man, yes.
Isn't that true?
If the Rangers win, is it the Cowboys' year as well?
Maybe,
Because Creed is involved?
You think Jerry Jones is already on the phone with Creed right now? Start playing in our locker room. We'll crank some Creed.
Now, we need you at Thanksgiving again this year.
That's right. This year, you're going to be performing again.
It was Thanksgiving in what? What was that?
2001.
It was Thanksgiving, though, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was Thanksgiving for all of America to see. So it's so great. That's awesome. Running around in an 11 jersey, which at that time was not Micah Parsons, kids. It was Danny White or other 11s that had worn that jersey. To me, it'd always be Danny White. You know what I remember about Danny White the most? So he was the punter, but he was also the backup quarterback to Roger Staubach. But he was also the punter. But there is an iconic image after Super Bowl XII of Danny White kissing a cheerleader. Not just like kissing, like, mwah, like kissing the cheerleader. And he told the story later, like they were really good friends. They were just friends. He didn't really date her or anything, but not after that Super Bowl. That's what I remember about Danny White. Nothing else. Nothing about like losing in the playoffs in the 80s. Nothing else.
How much backlash would he get today?
Oh, probably a ton. Probably a ton.
Like, does that like kick off the team offensive?
What, kissing a cheerleader?
Yeah.
Remember Rob Gronkowski was dating a Patriots cheerleader and she had to quit.
Yeah.
Like they can't have him quit. He's not quitting. You're either dating him outside of this, or you're cheering for the Patriots, one or the other. That's one or the other. That's it. How much of that is really enforced, though? Like, if you're a football player on the Raiders and you see an attractive young lady and you're like, oh, what's her name? And what do you think? They probably would like officially kick you off, but could you sneak around enough with that? Or do you think it's just too? It's too crazy. Too social media nuts.
I think you get caught now.
I think if you went out to dinner, if you're the starting quarterback of the team and you're single, and you go out to dinner with a young lady, somebody's going to take a picture and post it. And somebody's going to go, hey, I think that's Lisa on the Raiderettes. And the next thing you know, you've been exposed as dating Garoppolo.
In our time, when we were younger, like in our 20s, we can get away with anything. Pretty much, I don't want to say we can get away with anything, but you didn't carry a camera with you all the time.
No, that's right. If you were the starting quarterback of the Atlanta Falcons in 1987.
Steve DeBerg?
Yeah, you could date a cheerleader and not have it be on the top trending articles of the NFL. It would be, just happens.
You can go to that chicken wing place in Atlanta.
That's right. You can, yeah. Yeah, or go to varsity for a hot dog.
You know that chicken wing place, right?
I sure do. That's right, the stripper place.
Yeah. No, it's a chicken wing place.
It's a chicken wing place.
It's a chicken wing place.
Exactly. They got great chicken wings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, sure, the servers might be a little more eye candy than you're used to at a normal chicken wing establishment.
That's right. One bit of NFL news from yesterday. Van Jefferson was traded to the Atlanta Falcons. I don't think that makes a difference at all. It was just they liked Van Jefferson one time, and now they
don't.
That's
huge.
Yeah. They used to like him, now they don't like him, and now he's on the Atlanta Falcons. So what they got for him was swapping late picks. Do you think it's insulting when you're a player and you get traded for late picks?
Yeah.
Or do you go, oh, I kind of get it. I cost this much, and they don't want the money. Or do you think you go, wow, they really don't want me around.
Like, it depends on performance. Like, you know, with Aaron Rodgers' situation, it was different, right? If he excelled, he would have, you know, the Packers would have gotten a first rounder.
Right.
You know, because he barely played and didn't exceed, you know, didn't hit certain numbers that would have got a first rounder or a second round. But I think it's. You know, I think it is almost like a slap in the face. If you're, you know, a decent player, you get traded for picks to be named later.
That's, yeah, picks to be named later, or we've swapped a 7 for a 6 in the draft 2 years from now.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Right.
Like, that's what I'm going for?
And this guy.
Like, you wanted to get rid of me so bad, you were swapping late round picks. That's all you're getting? Not even like a car or anything. I don't get no value coming back. No, that's so. Van Jefferson is now in Atlanta.
We've got two quarterback news too that I just saw pop up. One is Anthony Richardson.
Yes, he is.
He's on IR.
He's going to be out like 8 weeks.
Yeah,
So Gardner Minshew, one of our favorites, is going to be the starting quarterback.
He's your starting quarterback. Just right. Your fantasy league rosters, kids.
Get the mustache.
The other one I saw, I mentioned this yesterday, and I think it's happening again today. I don't think Deshaun Watson practiced again.
No, I don't think so either. I think you're right. I think he's in a little jeopardy to play.
And so I'm wondering what's going on because medically he's been cleared to play.
Yeah, what is happening with Deshaun Watson?
Yeah.
That's a good question. That's a good question. What are they?
I'm almost thinking because, like I said yesterday, it feels very eerily similar to what was going on in Houston,
right.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. I'm just wondering what is going on there. I mean, he was going to be getting fined, and he did end up getting fined by the NFL for something. I don't remember one of those stupid fines. And I think that might have nulled his guaranteed contract, but nothing has been said about it yet.
Yeah.
Be curious.
Well, I'm interested because I'm always interested to see how these guys sabotage everything that has been given to them, that even if they the most craziest contract ever given out in NFL history and how you blow that, how you screw that thing up. I'm very curious if that actually
happens.
Like,
in the case I'm looking at it right now, Russell Wilson, I don't know if it's his fault, if it's, Sean Payton's fault, if it's just, the Broncos that are the front line in front of them or no weapon, no real weapons. I don't know whose fault it is.
Right.
So I can't really, I don't want to say that he's screwing up his contract, but I do get the feeling at some point they're just like, you know what, we just can't deal with you, kid.
Well, I'm curious about that. I keep hearing people say this and I'm like, you know what? It's time for the media to create another narrative, which is, I don't mind if people want to say they should part ways with this quarterback, but also include what it would cost them to do that. Like, I don't think we're kind of raising a generation of people who think this is fantasy football, where you just drop a guy.
Right.
You just let him go. And then somebody picks him up. Like, you just go click, he's gone. That's not how this works. Like, you can do that. You can tell Russell Wilson to stay home. You can say, don't ever come back.
You can put him on the bench.
But a certain percentage of his salary is going to be counted against your dead cap space.
Yep.
And it matters when you want to go out and get at somebody else. Now, it doesn't mean they can't do it.
It also makes it hard when you're paying someone that type of money to have him just sit there and hold a clipboard.
Right,
because
exactly.
He no longer has it.
And remember, guaranteed means guaranteed. It means they get it. If you give Deshaun Watson a fully guaranteed contract, he doesn't have to play for you, but you're giving him all of the $30 million.
Right.
Right? Same thing with Russell Wilson. He didn't get that, but
he didn't get guaranteed, but
money was guaranteed to him is going into his pocket. Whether you play him or don't play him, that's the deal you made with him. So yeah, it does come with some consequences. But again, it doesn't mean you can't work around those consequences. It doesn't mean you can't you can figure it out. You got smart people. In fact, kids, if you're a smart young math genius, become a salary cap person in the NFL.
There you go.
They need them. Like, forget being an accountant at like Goldman Sachs. go work for the Jacksonville Jaguars, figuring out their salary cap.
Remember the movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner?
Yes.
All right, that was the one role one character I really found fascinating. That was what's her name? Is it Jennifer Gardner?
Yeah, Jennifer Gardner. Yeah,
her role. I mean, I don't know what her official title was, but she was the salary cap person.
Salary cap person, yeah.
They would look to her, and she would like, well, give me a second there, and she would just crunch numbers in her head. It's like, oh, this is what we need, or we need this, or that. Where puts us over here? And I was like, that's fascinating to me. That's our only thing to do is that.
You come to your GM and your coach and you go, okay, here's the deal. If you want to get rid of this player, there's four options I created on this spreadsheet. Option A, we cut him and then we do this to make up for the money. Then option B, and then that's what you do. You just do math all day figuring out the right formula so you can release guys who stink.
How many times
they're going to cost you a fortune.
How many times do you explore, are you asked to explore scenarios that never happen?
Probably all the time. What if we got rid of the middle linebacker, Mike Simmons? Didn't we just sign him 2 years ago? Hold on, I'll get right back to you.
Yep.
Magical formulas. Yeah.
Like how many when the Jets numbers guy. How many different scenarios did you write up for Zach Wilson?
Of course. Yeah. How do we free up enough money to get a Kirk Cousins?
I need a scenario for all 31 other teams.
That's right. Exactly. We're on Wake Up Call continuing as well.